Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to another Deserted Island Dish. Here we are again on a Wednesday. I know I've missed the last couple of weeks, so apologies. I couldn't get anyone else to fill in while I went on holiday. So any volunteers that want to do Deserted Island Dish in the future to help me out when I'm on holiday, that would be very welcome indeed. So if people don't know the format, it's Deserted Island Dish, and usually we have someone who's born in Ireland, now living in Sheffield, and they talk us through their life story, and we play a few songs, and we have a great hour of chat and music, and we have a good laugh. And one of my previous guests is joining me again tonight, so it's Joe McNally. Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm doing very well, thank you.
Great to have you back. So we had a great hour when you were on. Joe was born in Kildare and ended up in Sheffield. He got to Chief Superintendent in South Yorkshire Police, and we had a very good hour talking about his stories, and we had a laugh, and great music choices. But one of the things that we didn't really get to complete, because it's such a huge thing and a big part of Joe's life now, is his work in Bethlehem and the work he's done there. So we're going to spend some time just unpicking that and talking a bit more about that. So, well, let's start us off, Joe. So where did the idea come from? So tell us where we are today. What have you achieved so far today?
Well, what we've got today is the only hospice, the only hospice in Palestine. And it's taken a few years to get to this point, but that's what we've got. We're a small team looking after 200 patients. And this week we've made our 4,000th home visit. It's a hospice at home. And it is the only one that's licensed by the Palestinian Authority.
So it's you people going to people's houses.
Yes.
So it's people at end of life, is it?
Like, yes.
Yeah, and so I think you said last time that you weren't expecting to see that many people at all. So it's kind of it's a shame, isn't it, really, that many people need that support.
Yeah. Well, the need is huge. Starting from the beginning, the palliative care is unknown in that part of the world.
Yeah.
The Palestinian Authority didn't recognise it, simply because the Palestinian Authority is broke. Yeah. A population of about 5 million people and a debt of 550 million. Yeah. So palliative care wasn't on their agenda. But we engaged with them, we spoke to them. The need is demonstrably very, very great. We reacted, we didn't know about it ourselves, of course, we reacted to the requests from the local Christian population. I suppose the way it all started, and just to give you a feel for it, was in 2002, I went out there with a group that's supporting Christians in the Holy Land, and that was the first Intifada. And I met a lady there called Leila Asfura, and she was in fact the tour agent. Very good woman, very, very interested in supporting her community. And that was that. And then fast forward to 2009, and I had the opportunity to lead an international Catholic men's group, and I decided we would go to the Holy Land, yeah, on pilgrimage. So 198 of us shipped out and went and did our pilgrimage. And part of that, we had a collection. And the collection raised $3,300, yeah, and a Wicklow man who was there made it up to $4,000. So we, yeah, gave it to Leila, and that was on the 9th of April 2010.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you where it was. It was on the edge of the Sea of Galilee, and by the 31st of May, Leila had opened a home for caring for elderly ladies.
Oh.
And that was a huge need.
Yeah, that was quick. She did it quick, didn't she?
Well, it was necessary. And she didn't hang about. She just got on with it. And it was necessary. She opened what she called a care and repair centre for these ladies. Now, it was a rented accommodation, which was converted, and it's still going today.
Yeah.
That was fine as it was. We went back, Hallam Diocese.
Yeah. Is that your local church?
Yeah. Hallam Diocese went back in 2011, and again in 2012. And we were talking to Leila in 2012, and she was trying to find a permanent place for her work.
Yeah.
And I said to her, Leila, how much have you got? And she said, about $5,000. Well, we had given her 3.5 of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And what it showed was that the resources just weren't there.
Yeah.
There was nothing there that they could draw on to make themselves any better than they were. So I said, Bishop John Rossthorne was the bishop at the time. And I said to him, oh gosh, that's a bit difficult. What are we going to do about that? I said, he said, I'll tell you exactly what we're going to do about it. He said, we're going to set up a charity to help. He said, and I'll be the patron and you can do the work.
And that's how it works.
And we often laugh about that. And that's what happened. And we set up the Hallam Bethlehem Fund and start to raise money to acquire a premises for Leila and her work with the elderly. And it was hard work, I'll tell you. I thought we'd do it in 2 and 3 years, and Bishop John said, no, you won't. I can guarantee you won't do it, and he was right.
Yeah.
We didn't do it. So, but we kept at it. Well, 4 years later, five years later, we'd raised 300,000.
Wow. Yeah.
And we were just interested in progressing the idea that we were working towards. And the Lord works in wonderful ways, I think, because a charity stepped in and started helping. St. Martha's House is what we were talking about, is where she'd set up St. Martha's House. And then Leila said, I'll tell you what we really, really need. We really need a hospice.
Yeah.
Now, we weren't the first people she'd asked.
Yeah.
She'd been asking anybody who came by her door sort of thing, because it was necessary. What we didn't realise at the time, and I don't think she did either, in terms of where she was at, was that they were living in an explosion of cancer.
Yeah.
For example, between the years 2000 and 2016, cancer cases in Bethlehem rose by 136%.
Wow.
With a further 14% in the next 4 years. And so they were seeing this
huge, any understanding of why that was?
Or? Oh yes, there's some of it lifestyle, some of it is due to how people get rid of nasty waste.
Disposing of
And that sort of stuff, and it's outside, some of it is outside the control of the Palestinian Authority.
Yeah.
And that was what they were asking. So we came back and we had a scrum down, as they say, and have a committee meeting, and we said, will we do it or won't we? Now, we had been told by those who are longer in the game and bigger charities who have been consulted that it couldn't be done.
Yeah.
So, but we said we'd do it.
We'd have a go.
And we'd have a go, and we had a go. So when we got to the stage where we'd raised the money, we looked around to see what we could do with it, but £300,000 seems a lot, but it's not.
And how did you get the £300,000? What kind of things were you doing?
Oh gosh, everything. Raffles, sponsored walks, we put on functions of here, there, never, annual. We used to do an annual ball, and I'll tell you about that later on.
Yeah, yeah.
we would have bake sales, anything that could be done to raise a shekel, as they say, raise a pound, we would do. And it was very good because we didn't have any expenses. The trustees, all of the expenses of the trust were met by the trustees.
Out of
private funds, and that was great. And we had some fantastic folk from the start. We were put together, as it were, because of the pilgrimage. We'd been out there. We'd seen what the need was. Nobody had to convince us.
So the trustees, a lot of the trustees would have been people that had been out, obviously.
Yes, of course, We'd seen it for ourselves, and nobody had to convince us that it needed doing, because you could see it. It needed doing, and you were able to go out and see it.
Yeah. We're going to mix up the hour, Joe, with some songs. So we've got plenty to talk about. We've still got most of the hour left. So we'd ask to try and get some songs that kind of fit what we're talking about. So usually, Deserted Island Destiny, we talk about people that mean a lot, songs that mean a lot to people's lives. So we've gone for, you asked for Do The Town I Love So Well.
Well, that reflects my view of Bob Levin.
Yeah, so let's play Luke Kelly's version of The Town I Love So Well. So we've got a slight technical hitch. One sec. We'll sort this out, Joe. If you tell us a bit more, then where we're up to, kind of your fundraising, etc. Well, I just sort the music out. Sorry.
Well, the fundraising is as we've said. When we get to the stage, what can we do with that sort of money? I just like to say to you that the need we need to think about what we were trying to do and why we were trying to do it. The whole idea of, I mean, we haven't talked about, and maybe it's I can do it now. Palestine itself is an emerging state. Mm. It's underdeveloped. All aspects of it is underdeveloped. I've mentioned earlier on about the authority is broke.
Yeah.
It struggles for most of the things that it needs. Its health service is spasmodic. It's uneven. It's not well developed at all.
Yeah.
It has cancer hospitals. I'm speaking to the chief executive of the hospital in Biajala. He was telling us some of the things that they face. He said, well, if you go to your, for example, if you go to your hospital in the NHS and you get a scan, or you get an X-ray, you're getting a magnification of about 16.
Yeah.
He says, I get a magnification of about 2.
Yeah.
Now the result of that, pardon me, is that cancer is not diagnosed in the same way as it is here.
You won't catch it early enough. Yeah.
Seven out of every 10 are diagnosed too late for any curative treatment. So now, without palliative care, or without any care, really, I mean, it's what your family can do for you.
Yeah.
It's quite hard.
Yeah.
And there's nobody coming up on the outside, as it were. We were told, for example, that you can't, you couldn't get the drugs that you need to deal with them.
Yeah.
You can. The problem is you can't get the doctors to prescribe them because they're not dealing with it every day. They can't afford it.
Or they don't know what to prescribe. Yeah.
Yes, they're not used to prescribing it. It's not in their regime.
Yeah.
And there's a whole way of life there that we don't really understand. You see, as we look at it, it's Christmas.
Yeah.
And we'll all sing the carols, as we will sing tonight.
Yeah.
And we will talk about Bethlehem, and it's a joyful, joyous place. Bethlehem is not. It is a struggling community. It is still a struggling community. For example, the lights have been off for the last 2 years. Nobody worth the damn has worked there.
Yeah.
For 2 years. Since the 7th of October 2023, everything stopped.
Yeah.
It got locked down. Thousands, and I mean thousands, lost their jobs because of the lockdowns.
Yeah.
They can't get permits to go where they need to go.
Yeah, so they can't travel for work.
Yeah. Can't travel for anything. They're completely locked down. Yeah. All the shops are empty. The hotels are closed. They've only just opened this year for Christmas. And if you look at what was on the on Facebook or whatever in relation to the lighting of the Christmas tree in Bethlehem,
yeah.
The lights came on, but the festivities were not supported by anybody from outside. The Palestinians are able to attend Mass at the Church of the at the St. Catherine's Church beside the Church of the Nativity, but the dignitaries, the international presence that was there for many a year before that, just not there. They can't get through.
Can't get in. All out, yeah.
I remember before this, before 2023, you still had to have permits to move. You still had to have permits to move from Bethlehem to Jerusalem. It's only six miles.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, and the people my age, who are Catholic Christians, who've never been to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, 6 miles away, and can't get permission to go. And I remember going to Augusta Victoria Hospice, which is in East Jerusalem. And we were looking around there. We were talking to them about the possibility of setting up the service, which we eventually set up. And as I went into a ward, and I'll tell you just, there was a woman, a young woman, in the bed. There was a young man by her bed. And that young man was her son. And he was as nice a young man as you'd meet. Any family would be pleased to have him. And they were telling us that Mom was terminally ill.
Yeah.
And she accepted that. I mean, she was at that stage where she accepted that. Her son was at her bedside. And he had to leave work to do that.
Yeah.
He had five brothers who lived in Nablus who couldn't get a permit.
Yeah.
To come to see their mother.
When she's on her deathbed.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And I mean, some of the things that we've been able to do since we started was to take people from the Augusta Victoria and look after them in the last 3 or 4 days so as that they would be with their family when they passed on. But sorry, I've
no, that's diverted. That's really interesting.
But it's a really controlled environment.
Yeah.
That control has been accentuated and strengthened because of the war.
Yeah.
Bethlehem has horrendous unemployment rates, 89% at one time.
Yeah.
And that, of course, kicks back to us because people can't afford medication.
Yeah.
People can't afford to look after families.
Yeah.
And that's why we're at 200.
No. Well, let's go back to the town I love so well. So you're saying you love Bethlehem. So
yes,
well,
it is a lovely plan.
Practice. Yeah. So let's hope it works this time. Yeah.
Gas yard wall, and we laughed through the smoke and the smell. Going home in the rain, running up the dark lane, past the jail and down behind the fountain. Those were happy days. In so many, many ways, in the town I loved so well. In the early morning, the shirt factory horn called women from Cregan, the moor and the bog, while the men on the dole played a mother's role. gathered the children, and then trained the dog. And when times got tough, there was just about enough, but they saw it through without complaining. For deep inside was a burning pride in the town I loved so well. There was music there in the dairy air, like a language that we all could understand. I remember the day that I earned my first pay, when I played in a small pickup band. There I spent my youth, and to tell you the truth, I was sad to leave it all behind me. For I'd learned about life, and I'd found a wife in the town I loved so well. When I returned, how my eyes have burned to see how a town could be brought to its knees by the armored cars and the bombed out bars and the gas that hangs on to every breeze. The army's installed by that old gas yard wall, and the damned barbed wire gets higher and higher. With their tanks and their guns, oh my God, what have they done to the town I loved so well? The music's gone, but they carry on, for their spirit's been bruised, never broken. They will not forget, but their hearts are set on tomorrow and peace once again. For what's done is done, and what's won is won, and what's lost is lost and gone forever. I can only pray for a bright, brand new day in the town I love so.
Town I Love So Well. That's the Luke Kelly version. And yeah, we're in on Deserted Island Disc, and we've got Joe McNally with us, who's my guest. So Joe was a guest when we did his Deserted Island Disc, which is him talking about his life. And the town that he loves so well tonight that we're talking about is Bethlehem. So how many times have you been to Bethlehem, Joe, would you say?
16, 18.
So I've seen it that many times. Mm-hmm. So you got to know it and I love it, like you say. Yeah. But what Joe has done is helped set up a hospice in... it's not in Bethlehem, is it? It's
in Bethlehem.
It's in Bethlehem,
yes,
is it? Sorry,
it's in Bethlehem, yes.
Yeah. But Joe, I know from his last show, was very, very modest. He achieved so much in life and his career in the police, etc. And he did want to talk about that. But what I'm interested in, Joe, is kind of why you? Why have you been the person to lead this and make this happen, do you think?
Well, at the time we went there, and at the time we were asked if we would help with, I'm considering trying to get them at hospice. I was leading the pilgrimage, so I suppose I was the leader of the group, and it fell naturally.
Why was you leading the pilgrimage? And let's go back a stage. Why was you the leader of the pilgrimage?
Well, I'd been in 2010, as I told you, and we led a big pilgrimage there, and I took the view that. If you want to understand and see what's happening in the Holy Land, you've got to go there.
Yeah,
you've got to go and look for yourself, and because all of the images of Bethlehem are of the Christmas images, the Christmas card images, away in a manger, and all of that, it converges on our celebration, and it's right that we should celebrate. But it converges as if the world celebrates in the same way as we do, and we're all celebrating because it's Christ is born. We're all celebrating because it's Christmas, and that's right. But the reality in Bethlehem is quite different in a sense.
Yeah.
They do celebrate in as far as they can, but it's a very much a place without. Without a lot of resources, it's built on tourism.
Yeah.
If tourism fails, people don't eat. It's as simple as that. People don't live.
Yeah.
You look at what's happened since 2023. The place has been locked down.
So the tourists can't go now.
Nobody has been able to go. Right, they're beginning to open up for this Christmas. You've seen the lights, as I've mentioned.
Yeah.
Starting in Manger Square. And that's just the beginning of it. I could show you photographs that a priest from this diocese, Father Gus O'Reilly, took in June this year.
Yeah.
Empty streets, empty Church of the Nativity. 2 million people a year go through Bethlehem as pilgrims and tourists.
Yeah.
None.
Stops. Yeah.
None. 1,800 families had work in Jerusalem. After October 2023, no permits, can't go, won't be allowed to go. But I was talking to you, and I don't know if I finished the story because it illustrates about that woman who was in the bed, who was dying. And as I said, she had 5 sons, and they couldn't get permits to go and see their mother, to go and see their mother dying. And the system of permits controls and restricts the free movement of people. Then there's the wall. There's the wall all around Bethlehem.
Yeah, yeah. So that kind of border wall between Israel and Palestine.
Oh, no.
Is it not?
No. It's not between Israel and Palestine. It cuts straight through Palestine, through the West Bank. It's Palestinian land. It goes through olive groves.
Right.
It goes through Bethlehem. Either side is Bethlehem.
Right.
I mean, people have taken me to their back rooms and showed me the wall that passes at the end of their garden and showed me the far side of the wall where their daughter or sister lives and they can't get to her.
Yeah.
Because of that's the way it is.
Right, right.
But they're resilient people. But this, but you said, how did I get to be with this? Well, we went and set up that charity. When they asked us to look at a hospice, we did. And we set up the Bethlehem Care and Hospice Trust, which it speaks for itself. We went back, my wife and I, in the first instance, and they had a new parish priest. The first parish priest, Father Nirwan, had left, but he was very supportive to the idea and was one of the early people that had asked us to do something for them.
Yeah.
And they had a new man, Father Rami Eskira. He was a Jordanian, is a Jordanian. And I remember sitting in his office and trying to explain to him what it was we were trying to achieve. And he listened patiently and quietly. And halfway through it, he said, "Do you mean this, this and this?" And I said, "Yes, I do." He said, "But we need this." Yeah. I said, "That's what I've been trying to tell you."
Yeah.
And he became the key,
yeah,
in doing it all, because he knew Bethlehem absolutely intently.
Yeah.
And he took us to see the mayor, and we had a chat with the mayor, and then we entered into the political side of things. The mayor was worried about all sorts of political things that weren't bothering us. And he gave us an undertaking that he would pursue it. In the event, he didn't. Right. And we
sounds like politicians, yeah.
we carried on. But Father Rami did. And what he did, while we were trying to get licences and things like that, he was busy looking for premises. And he found us a premises, and not alone did he find us a premises, but he found a sponsor to renovate it,
yeah,
and set it up for us within the parish, and that's where we work from now.
Brilliant, brilliant. It's good stuff. Mm. Well, it's difficult to talk about Palestine and Bethlehem and Israel without talking about the politics. And I know you, as a charity, are kind of... you kind of stuck, aren't you, about kind of what you can and can't say in that sense about the politics of Palestine and Israel. But Christy Moore can say some things. So we'll play a Christy Moore song. So he's wrote a song called Palestine, and then we'll play this and come back and get your views or say what you can say about it, if that's all right.
Yeah, I'm not aware of Christy singing, but he's a Kildare man.
Is he from Kildare as well? Yes.
Let me tell you a story, I'll be quick as I can. Terrible news from the Holy Land. Pictures of children etched in my mind, buried in the rubble on the firing line. The Jews and the Arabs lived one and the same, 1,000 years and the Zionists came like a river, came like a flood. Al-Nakba was written on the wall in blood. Talk about settlers from far away, talk about dollars from the USA, talk about blast bombs, the bullets and the lead, the shadow of the jackboot hanging over your head. What can you do when they demolish your home? Olive trees buried and gone. Do you dare to resist? Stand on the road with a rock in your fist. In Palestine, in Palestine, they talk about peace like it's a moral obligation. There'll never be peace under occupation. Talk about talks to the beat of the drum. 70 years Nakba rolls on. We need to talk about the friends that we endorse, the rockets and the tanks and the warships they disperse. No wonder it seems to be an undemocratic version of democracy in Palestine, in Palestine. Let me tell you a story, I'll be quick as I can. There's terrible news from the Holy Land.
Yes, Christy Moore there. Yes, so he killed a man. He wrote that song only a couple of years ago, I think. It's quite a new one for Christy, but it's still going strong, yeah. So, as he's saying, Christy, he's talking about the terrible news for the Holy Land. And for you, I suppose, in the charity, you're saying it's difficult for you to have a public opinion, but is there anything you can say about that kind of situation?
People won't be living in the real world if they don't know what is going on in the Holy Land, what the individual actors are and what their stances are. I mean, it's interesting that Christy should, I haven't heard it before, but it's interesting that Christy should write that song because of the similarities between Ireland's situation and Paris and Palestine's situation, which has been highlighted, I know, politically recently. But from my point of view on the charity, it's not something I can or should. I have private opinions, but that's what I can or should become involved in, and certainly not on radio. Thank you.
Thanks. You know, that's understandable. Yes, yeah. We can see that. So, I mean, you must have seen then some quite harrowing stuff there when you're over there. And so, I mean, anyone at any hospice, you know, in the UK or anywhere, of amazing people that work there. But what are the staff like there then? You work with?
Well, we've got four nurses. We've got a number of volunteers, and the volunteers tend to be people who are studying on the master's course at nursing course at Bethlehem University and taking the palliative care option. Yeah. And hopefully that there'll be some people we could employ in the future, depending on funds, of course. We have a physio, and we have a finance director and CIO, CEO part-time. Now, that lady is absolutely... Well, they're all outstanding, but that lady is pretty outstanding. And she runs the show. And when we started off, we hired some nurses, and we were setting up. One of the difficulties, when I talked about the permits, one of the practical things, and we can give you an example, when we wanted to train our nurses, and we had been in touch with the Augusta Victoria Hospice, which I'd mentioned to you earlier, and they were happy for us to send nurses there for training.
Yeah.
But we couldn't get permits for them.
So they couldn't get to Jerusalem?
No, we couldn't get permits, so we had to send them to a good hospital in Jordan, right. King Hussein Hospital in Jordan. Pardon me, because that's expensive.
That's crazy, isn't it? So they couldn't get to... You'd have to go how many miles to Jordan.
What a hell of a distance.
Yeah.
And we did that and trained them and brought them back. We started off with 11 patients. Word of mouth then spread, like wildfire, as it were, that this service was available. And it started to grow. Our people started to learn. And then we had one of our nurses, our lead nurse, for their own family reasons, had to leave us. And the head nurse at the Augusta Victoria Hospice said to this lady, Rasha, had me in a chat. He was from Bethlehem, actually.
Yeah.
So he said, I'd like to go and work for you. So he left the hospice. So we got a highly trained, highly experienced, and God's good, and came to work with us. And then the other blessing we had was that another pilgrimage had gone out from Leeds some years before. And on that was a professor from Leeds University, Philip Hopkins, and a medical man. And Leila had asked him as well, and he had spoken to another charity, and they asked him to do some research for them, and he did, and he did a paper for them, and he heard nothing. But I had heard that Philip was interested, and I rang him and spoke to him, and the upshot of it was that he came on board, and he has been a tremendous help because he's a medical man, professor of anaesthetics, So there was another great.
So he helps on the kind of medical side.
Oh yes,
best practice and stuff.
In early days, and then when I stepped down as chairman, he took over, and it's working very well. So we've got some really good people there.
Yeah. So what's Layla's doing then? Layla's?
Yes.
What's her role now?
Layla's vice chair of the board. We set it up.
She's not being paid though.
No.
Oh, she's okay.
We set it up in Bethlehem in a way that we have a local board overseeing operations. We have a financial governance board from the trustees with part of the local board overseeing the finances, and we have a clinical governance board. Overseeing the clinical end of it, so we're putting as detailed a standards in there as we can in the circumstances, and of course the Palestinian Health Authority, that their licenses they review it, but they don't have any hub of palliative care experience within them.
Yeah.
Well, what was very interesting from our point of view was when the World Health Authority, the Palestinian Authority, recently accepted that palliative care is on the agenda, as it were.
Yeah.
Contacted and are dealing with the World Health Authority, but the World Health Authority came to us and spent a whole day with us. I was there, and we had a whole day exploring what we were doing and seeing how it was working, and they were absolutely delighted with what they found.
Yeah, well, they should be.
So that was that was very positive, and I know Philip has been in contact with them and remains in contact with them since. So that's
great to have Philip on board, because he'll have experience of UK hospices, I suppose. And
well, he has been a director. He has been a trustee of St Gemma's.
Right.
So that was pretty good, and that all comes and strengthens the team. And it's really good. And he's been out twice since, including with Father Gus in June, to review what's happening and bring some oversight to it. And I should say that these journeys are at their own expense.
No, it's fantastic. It's fantastic stuff. We've got to play A Little Town of Bethlehem, but I've done a version that's someone quite famous. I'll let the audience and you guess who's singing this. So it's A Little Town of Bethlehem. little town of Bethlehem. That was Bob Dylan, not Bob Villain, Bob Dylan's version. So he did a Christmas album a few years, some time ago, and on that he did Our Little Town of Bethlehem there. So very appropriate for tonight. So we've been talking to Joe McNally, who's set up a hospice with other people in Bethlehem, and he's coming to talk about that. So you say we've not been for a few years yourself, have you? It's been able to. So you?
No, sadly, I haven't been there since the hospice started.
Right. You health issues, weren't it? Did you have a?
We went out there in 2021, just to prepare the ground and do that, and I had a stroke while I was there, and I haven't been back. But I hope, please God, I hope to get back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you seem in good health now, but is it obviously? I don't know you that well, but you on the mend, or?
Yes, I mean, it's going to be.
Oh, okay. Well, good health to you.
Yeah, thank
good
God. Yeah, to you. Yeah, thank God.
So we've not got long left. We've got just less than 15 minutes. So I think what we need to say is kind of how do you keep it running still? How much does it cost then each year to keep it all going?
Well, it's costing us at the moment about 150,000 a year. Yeah. And that's possible because of, I keep saying, in Bethlehem they've learned to make a little go a very, very long way.
Yeah, that seems so, like,
There's another charity that they can borrow, and they do borrow when necessary, specialist beds from. There are people who give them stuff. There's
so in kind stuff. Oh,
yes,
yeah.
And pardon me, we've recently had to buy them a vehicle.
Yeah,
we'd love to get another one because people are using their cars, which is not ideal, and they're building teams. But it costs. About 150,000 a year, say £400 or £500 a day, £3,500 a week, £12,000-£14,000 a month.
Yeah.
Now, when you put that, as a UK hospice costs £150,000 a day.
I was going to say it sounds like a bargain. Yeah.
Well, we make a little go a very long way.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, it's learning. You see, because even people at cancer hospitals don't get proper palliative care, and part of our work is educating medics as well, and educating nursing staff as to how best to cater for.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
so you give training and.
And that of course then helps the populace and reduces the burden on us, and that's the way we work. So that's what we do. We had a ball in. How do we raise money? We had a ball fortnight ago. In the Royal Vic, we raised £12,500.
Fantastic! That's good going.
It's very good going for a night out.
Yeah.
We're having another one in Manchester on the 21st of March, in conjunction with the what used to be St Anne's Hospice in.
Yes, I know.
In Manchester,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So that's starting now. We're starting to organise for that. We have appeals in schools, we have appeals in churches, we have appeals all over the place.
Yeah.
And people are very generous and people do help us. Be honest, we have probably our funds at the moment is enough money till the middle of 2016 or 2026, I should say,
yeah.
Or maybe till, when I say middle, June to September time.
Yeah.
And
Well done. Well, so how can people donate, or what's the best? I know you don't want just money, don't you? So
no. I mean, money is very, very important, and let me deal with that, because if people go on the website and they will see how to donate there, just follow the website.
What's the website?
It's very simple. It's www.bcandhht.org.
Right.
That's the simple one. Otherwise, it's BethlehemCareAndHospiceTrust.org in full.
Yeah.
And you can press the button and donate there.
Yeah, so it's Bethlehem Care and Hospice Trust is what people need to know.
Yes.
They'll find it, and then there's a donate.
And then there's a donate box there.
Yeah.
And you can do that. We're also keen to hear from people who have a couple of hours to spare who would like to help us.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then on the website, just touch. There's a form on the website which you can fill in and contact us, or write to info@bcnht.org.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what kind of things are you asking people to help with?
Well, fundraising and raising awareness of what's happening in Bethlehem and fundraising, or if you can give it, if people can give time to do some office work or do some
admin and stuff.
Do some admin and things and things like that. That would be very, very much appreciated. But we will try and find a space for whoever people want to do to help, and we will find a way to accommodate them.
Fantastic. Should we have another song? So I found this song. It's a carol, so it's apt, really. It's called Bethlehem Down, and it was written by a guy called Peter Warlock. And I think it's just a beautiful carol that was written, and it's called Bethlehem Down. So let's play that one, and then we'll come back to say goodnight.
Thank you.
That's Bethlehem Down, which was a carol that was written in about 1917. It was written by Peter Warlock and James Vivian. And basically, there was a competition that the Daily Telegraph were running to who could write the best carol. And these fellows, musicians, had run out of money and they needed beer money to get through Christmas. So they wrote this carol and won the competition. But it's been a joy to listen to it for us all. I hope you enjoyed it. So that was sung by the Choir of St. George's. And it was played because we're talking about my guest tonight, Joe, who's really been one of the key players in opening a hospice in Bethlehem. And we've just got a few minutes, really. Joe, I wanted to kind of get an understanding of kind of the impact it's had on the people of Bethlehem having this hospice there.
Well, there's a video on our website that came from Bethlehem and was made in Bethlehem by the Bethlehem people. And the first thing they say is that they regard it as a great gift from God. Our hospice takes everybody. It's not Christian. It's a Christian charity, but they serve everybody of all religions and none. And that's important. It is welcomed, and I suppose the message is that the demand for nursing care now far outstrips what we can deliver. So the people of Bethlehem appreciate it and want to use it, and that's the bottom line. As I said, the demand far outstrips what we can deliver. Our plan, subject to funds permitting, is to extend that service across Palestine into Tabor, into Nablus, into Ramallah, places like that, where the need is great, and Jericho and places like that. The need for palliative care is great, and they still haven't got any. And people are dying there in pain. And there's no dignity in dying in pain, no matter where you are. So yes, it's very well received. And I suppose the lasting legacy. There's a doctor, and I forget his name. I did have a note of it, and it's an Arabic name, and I forget it. He is the head of anesthetic medicine at Al Quds University, and he's on record. And he talks about the quiet revolution that is taking place in Bethlehem. And he says, founded in love and dignity for individuals. And he pays tribute to the nurses, not serving where they can, but serving where it is most needed. Yeah. And I think that sums it up in a way. It is already, after 2 years, a valued service in Bethlehem. There is no dispute that it is a hugely necessary service in Bethlehem, and it really is appreciated across the board.
Yeah. Well, that in itself is a huge success, to have that mind shift in people, really, to have that change in the mindset of people from where they were previously, where it was just, you know, accepted, that's it, that's the way it is. And now that people are saying, no, it's needed, it is a fantastic achievement in itself.
Well, it is, because the cultural mindset was a stigma of cancer is it still exists, and we overcome that. Part of a project, and part of the project that we have to deal with is educating communities that we are available. And I suppose I should say as well that we have had assistance from the Irish government for the last 3 years with various projects that we were undertaking, and they sent their people down and gave us the once over and looked at it and they were happy that the service is all that it should be, and they were happy to support it. But the lasting message from me and the lasting the position is that great endorsement from that gentleman to say, there's a sea change happening, a quiet revolution, he calls it, in care, in Bethlehem, and that quiet revolution starts in Sheffield, and that's a lovely thought.
It is.
So please, this Christmas, as you as your listeners dig into your turkey and all your trimmings and your celebrations,